Welcome back to the Priority Wellness Podcast, Patricia.
Hi.
My name is Colin Hardy, and my co-host over there is Patrick O'Connell. Today, we have a very special guest, our deputy director for the last month, Ryan McIntosh. Ryan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah. If I could do like a, you know, an applause, if I could just hit a button on this mixer here.
Maybe we can add it in after. Yeah. We'll see.
An after effect, yeah. That'd be nice. Well, welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Sir.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying your time?
Glad to be here.
Well, I wish people could see what this studio office room thing looks like.
Yeah. This is our first time recording with a guest in person, and we actually have mics this time. We're not recording off of Zoom or on my phone, so hopefully the quality of this sounds much better when we release.
Oh, it's very nice. Your voice is very deep in my ear. Very smooth.
Pat is the only one with headphones on for reference.
So I can hear everything. Everything. Okay, so yeah. It's Mental Health Month.
Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah, Mental Health Awareness Month. Yeah.
Yes. And that's what we want to talk about today. You know, at the beginning of this month, we rolled out our peer program. And in the first 18 days, it's already getting used, which is great. I mean, great feedback so far. Ryan, you're in charge of that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So they developed it to basically, you know, if a first responder or someone in law enforcement is having some issues and they want to kind of talk one-on-one with a peer, we have a handful to choose from. And all of them have a significant amount of training and experience in the fields, and we'll point them to the right one and set up a meeting and have a little chat and see what we can do to help them.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's great. Then you started a new job.
Started a new job, yep. I was in corrections for 10 years, and that was enough.
Now you're a glorified vampire, is what you were telling me earlier.
Working for the Red Cross now. You know, so come donate your blood. That's just as important.
Yes, it is.
It's amazing what they do with it. I didn't know half of it until I started working there.
Where does, like, not to get off topic, but we're just going to keep it conversational. You guys do a blood drive. Where does it go from there?
So now it depends what your blood type is, but you can do what they call double reds, or you can just do a whole blood donation. So your double reds are, they're going to take your blood platelets out and they're going to put everything back into your body that you need. Okay. And then our whole bloods, they just take a pint of blood from you. It goes back to the organization. They separate it. You know, there's different stages of how long they can hold stuff, but now they have developed an app. So if you donate blood, you're given a number, your bag's given a number of your blood and everything in it. And there's an app now that you can track the process of where your blood's gone. So if it goes to a hospital, it'll tell you what hospital it went to. Obviously not to a patient because of HIPAA, but, you know, it shows you every stage from donation to testing to storage and then wherever they send it from there. So that's pretty neat. I didn't know that until I started, and it's somewhat new. And, you know, I just gave blood a couple weeks ago, and mine's still in storage for right now.
I can't do it. I want to give blood, but last time I gave blood, I was in high school, and my friend Pat, ironically enough, he told me they're not supposed to eat before you give blood.
You probably should eat.
I think he got it confused with, like, fasting blood, getting fasting blood work. And so I ended up, you know, gave blood and it was fine. You know, after you get blood, you have to go to like the little table and you have to sit, eat cookies and drink some juice. Yeah. And there's like a little attendant there who's another high school student. And out of nowhere, I just get really lethargic and really tired. So I'm like, man, I had a mouthful of Cheez-Its and decided to put my head down. And the girl that was sitting across from me, she was like, Pat, you got to pick your head up. And as soon as I picked my head up, I sneezed and then I passed out. So there was like Cheez-It debris everywhere. passed out on my friend Luke. And yeah, and then I woke up on the floor and was really confused. And I've been, ever since then, I've been sketched out about getting blood.
You have IV people for a living.
Yeah, I know. I know. I can get IVs too. I can get IVs. I can get blood work done. But like,
just got to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, just moral of the story.
You know, for next time now.
Yeah.
So I've never actually given blood, but tell me more about that double.
So double red, you got to have it. There's a specific guidelines. You got to be, for male and female, it's different. You got to be a certain weight, certain height. Your hemoglobin's got to be on spot, and you have to be the right blood type. So I'm O positive. So I went the other day to give blood. Never done the doubles before.
Right.
They checked my hemoglobin. It was really good. And they said, "Do you want to do doubles?" And I said, "I don't even know what it is, but let's do it." So
they didn't tell you. It's like, oh, yep.
Well, they explained. And I'll give them 100% credit that they, during the whole process, they explained everything they were going to do. And you literally watch it happen in front of your eyes. So they put an IV in your arm. They take your blood out. Goes in this machine they have there. It spins, takes your platelets out, puts your plasma into another bag that you can see filling up. And then once it's done collecting and spinning all of it out, they take your plasma with saline and they put it back in your body.
Oh.
Okay. And then they do another blood draw. So you're doing two into one.
Wow.
But they're giving back your plasma and whatnot is what, and you're supposed to feel better. I felt fine after, I think that night we had a fire in one of our mutual aid departments and I felt fine.
I was going to say, did you feel more energized?
They say it's, I mean, I'd have to get regular blood again. It was since 2015 was the last time I donated. I don't remember how I felt after, but they're supposedly that because they're giving you back your platelets and everything that you need.
Gotcha.
You know, and just,
you're not doing this to, you know, get a leg up. Like you're not like a runner or anything. You're not trying to leg up in the race game. I know that's like what Lance Armstrong did, like EPO or something like that.
There's all sorts of stuff. And, you know, and then you can just donate your regular plasma. But, you know, that gets a little more trickier. That's at a fixed site. And, you know, and you have to, it takes, that one takes 2 to 3 hours.
Now, I just want to point out, we are not getting paid by the Red Cross to do this.
I'm just very intrigued at how much I've learned in the last week.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had a lot of people ask me about it, and it's really interesting that, you know, every day there's a blood drive somewhere, and it's crazy that to think that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to be in charge of what?
St. Lawrence County. So I was just an account manager. So I kind of help, you know, the ones that want to sponsor a blood drive, run them and help them out with advertising, whatever else they need. And, you know, just thanking them for doing it because, you know, there's always a blood need anywhere.
Dang. Well, we appreciate the work that you're going to do for the Red Cross. Yeah. Love the organization, hardworking people there. And you just left being a CEO.
For 10 years.
For 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was time to go.
Yeah. Did you have any, like, apprehensions about leaving, or are you just like,
no, I was ready. You know, I was lucky enough to only be downstate for 2 years. Some of these guys that are up here and women that are up here were downstate for 14, 15 years before they were home. And, you know, a lot of us are lucky now to come home, but, you know, it's just not what I want to do. It's more natural lifestyle. Now I'm awake during the daytime.
Yeah.
I can imagine how taxing it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it ties into mental health. There really isn't. And it's unfortunate, and you know, maybe they're working on it, but there just really isn't much mental health support in that field right now, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you know anybody needs to reach out, I know some people, pretty honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I feel like being a part of the Red Cross, this seems to align a little bit more with who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to, you know, emergency management field's where I'm at. I'm working on my master's, but you know, this isn't quite emergency management, but it kind of is. You know, we're out there seeing it, the need for blood and you know, how much someone in a car accident that's bleeding could possibly need is insane.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So you also wear another hat. You are the chief of the town of Brownville.
Yeah, town of Brownville Fire District. So I've been doing the district chief position for 6.5 years now. I'm going into my 7th year.
Gotcha.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I always tell myself that when I stop enjoying it is when I'll step back.
But now, that department has first responders, too.
Correct. Yeah, we have a handful of EMTs. I think we have 10. We got two more that are actually getting ready to take their EMT class, which is exciting. We're excited to help them and get them prepared so they can go out and do the same thing we're doing every day.
Good.
I actually think that one of your folks is taking the CLI class.
Oh, could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty busy. That's 90% of our calls.
Yeah, it sounds it. I hear you guys going out all the time. Yeah.
But it's nice because you're in your own community and you're meeting, and, you know, we always talk about, you know, you got these frequent flyers or whatnot, but they're people that you know. So it's nice to be able to, unfortunately, if they're calling you for a dire need, it's not enjoyable. But, you know, if something that's just, they don't feel well, we're touching base with them and seeing how their lives are going, and you're building a rapport with them.
Right, right. And, you know, sometimes those frequent flyers that we call frequent flyers, quote unquote, you know, sometimes they just want to see people.
Yeah, yeah.
They just want visitors. Yeah. You know, that's not always what we're necessarily there for, but
right.
It's still part of the community service.
And trying to keep people in the mindset that sometimes that is why they're calling and trying to go in there with a positive attitude. We know it's frustrating after time, but
right.
Trying to, you know, simple little things, you know, help them. I mean, for instance, the other day we had a guy who wasn't feeling well in his garage and needed some boxes taken out the side of the road. So after we took care of him, we carried the boxes out for him. Mm-hmm. Something like that is going to go a long way for your organization.
Have you ever heard of a term, compassion fatigue?
Yes.
Do you feel like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't even know.
Yeah.
You don't even have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's, you know, definitely, you know, and that's, and you know, I'm involved with the River Hospital program. I've been there for 2 years now. You know, I have visits with a therapist up there. It was one of the best decisions I ever made. I had stopped for a while about a year ago, and I was actually at one of our fire department trainings when I just panic attack, just set right in. And I remember in the middle of training telling guys, listen, you know, I need you to take over for me. I got to get out of here. You know, and I went home and, you know, talked to my wife and I said, I got to go back. This isn't working.
Right.
You know, and a lot of it was, you know, we talk about trauma. You know, I've been diagnosed with PTSD, the depression, the anxiety. And you talk about trauma. My reactions to trauma, I don't think were as normal people's are with the flashbacks and can't sleep. I slept just fine. I think a lot of mine was is I was constantly needing to go on the calls. I wasn't doing anything. I was canceling plans. I was leaving dinners. I was leaving events to go on that call. Because that's what distracted me. I couldn't sit with myself at home,
right.
You know, and be with myself. And, you know, that I remember in, I think it was 21, I did an insane amount.
You know, I
did like 547 calls, I think, that year. And I told myself after, I said, no more, you know, if I can't go, I can't go. And other people, they're really good at picking up. We're going to cover them. And that was a hard thing to come to that I needed to slow down a little bit.
So I have a question. If you being the chief of Brownville, did the panic attacks or the anxieties, do you feel like that affected morale at all? Like people that look up to you as a leader,
very good at hiding it.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't know. You know, when I'm in that mindset of, you know, the emergency call, that's all I think about. I'm focused on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not till after that you really start thinking about it.
Right.
You know, compartmentalize it. Yeah. You're just working through it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I can relate to that wholeheartedly where, you know, as a volunteer, when I first started out running all these calls and then compartmentalizing it, and then even being at home and being on an ambulance that's in the same village I live in, it's just as easy to go and run a call and to kind of sit with your thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that we all as first responders have those blinders on and just see straight ahead when we're actually doing it. But, you know, from somebody like, and I can't speak for everybody, but for somebody like me, I do a lot of driving. I mean, I just got a new car in December. I already have 26,000 miles on it, you know.
Yeah, I can't drive.
But, you know, what I'm trying to get at is that I have a lot of time to think. So that's when things pop up for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and, you know, and I think, actually, you know, I just had a check-in up there today, and it was the best one I had. It was, you know, I was even told by the individual I see that I looked better. I had a different, and I honestly think it was, you know, just career change. You know, most people it's a scary thing to do a career change. I knew it was time. You know, we've made some adjustments, but, you know, it won't be bad. And I've come to the realization that your traumas, they're never going to go away. Something's going to remind you. I mean, I could tell you, you know, I could tell you the color of the house that the guy kicked the door and screaming for his dog. It was blue with a white porch on it. You know, he's screaming for his dog at his house on fire. Dog won't come. I remember him kicking the door. I remember the sound. You know, and I remember after everything was calmed down, we ended up finding the dog in his crate just behind the door. So it's things like that. You're always going to remember. You're never going to forget them. But you reaching out and asking for help is going to allow you to kind of get it off your chest. And then you start working at how do I handle, when things like this happen again and dealing with them. And that was the biggest thing that, you know, not to plug in the River Hospital program, but it's an excellent program, you know, and we have with PwC, we have outreaches to get help for anyone that needs it up through there. And I can't say enough about what they've done for me. So.
I was going to say, I mean, I don't know if we can necessarily classify it as a partnership, but we can refer to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're always, so. You know, and it's quick referral up there, you know, and it's a program based off of, you know, first responders, military, law enforcement. There's a lot of people that use that, and it's a great program to have.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for such a small area and a lot of people that live in this area, either tied up with the fire department, ambulance, first responder, cop, you know, or even corrections, dispatcher, it's a much needed resource. And I feel like I've been in this for 11 years, and I think it was just last year that I heard about River.
Yep.
I don't know if they're a newer program or...
They've been around for, I can't put a timeline on it, but I've been going for at least two when I knew they're around. And, you know, when I, that first time I realized, I was like, I'm literally dedicating every minute of my life to this fire department and doing, which, you know, it's not a bad thing, but when it takes over your life, I said, I needed help. Like, clearly there's something going on that wants me to just push myself to the limit. And I remember I filled out went online and, you know, filled out the questionnaire. And I think within a day or two, someone called me, got me, you know, through the start of the process, and I was in.
Wow. That's,
you know, and it's fortunate that first responders and, you know, law enforcement, that stuff, that program's there, because that's specifically designated to them. You know, it's not on the civilian side of it.
Right.
So I've heard nothing but good things about that.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, like you, I know a few other firefighters and first responders that go to River, and they've been helped immensely.
Yeah.
Now when you first started going to River, how would you like, looking back to that time,
I was a mess.
Were you like bottom, like you were just in this dark pit?
Yeah. And it was, and like I said, it wasn't really the, you know, I don't want to say typical, but typical PTSD symptoms of, you know, flashbacks and not being able to sleep. I mean, granted, like I said, I could paint a picture in my head of everything that I've seen, you know, certain roads you take reminds you of things like that. It was just, that was controlling my life, and it wasn't a healthy lifestyle.
Right.
You know, and then they start you right off, and it's a lot of hard conversations and tears. But from where I am now to back then, it's amazing.
Yeah. Do you feel like now that you've been going to River, you're able to talk? Well, you would definitely talk more openly about it.
Yeah. I held it in for the longest time. You know, because you usually always think if you may say something, and in a leadership role with, you know, the fire department, I always thought, why would anyone want their leader to tell them that they're having mental health issues?
Right.
You know, since then I feel like I've been a lot more communicative with the team, and they feel more comfortable coming to me, and I'm not afraid to tell them that, you know, when you have an issue, I want you to call me and we'll help you.
I think it's so important for people to see that vulnerability.
Yeah.
And you mentioned in an interview that you were doing last week with PwC that it starts with the leadership down. Otherwise, they're just not going to feel comfortable.
Right. You know, and as a leader, you don't got to say, well, I'm having trouble or it's not, but just be understanding and talk to your people a little bit more. Pick up on the biggest thing that I've been able to do, and it's pretty impressive. I don't know how I figured it out, but you're picking up on an individual's like pattern change. If, you know, if they're not showing up all of a sudden and you're not hearing from them, they're not texting you or whatnot, check in on them, you know, give them a couple days, show up at their house, make sure they're all right. You know, a lot of times people got other stuff going on in their house. A lot of these people are volunteers. You know, a lot of you do it for a living, but there's a lot that do it on their spare time, and it's hard to juggle everything. And, you know, it's, we're real short. And I mean, not just in New York State, across the country, volunteers are short. So, you know, but unfortunately, it comes last.
Yeah. I was at a conference. I want to say that it was sometime either last year or the year before, where the person presenting was sharing a story. He was a chief of a fire department in Central New York, and he shared that one of his folks didn't show up for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And they ended up finding him at his home, yeah. no longer with us.
Right.
And it's so sad because he additionally shared that this person was such a happy-go-lucky person and you wouldn't have known that anything was actually going on. So just even doing regular check-ins with people.
Yeah. Some people when are you really don't good suspect at hiding things. It, unfortunately, yes. Terrible, but yeah. You know, and you don't want to push too much. That's the thing. You push too much, they're nervous. They're never gonna,
right?
Never gonna open up,
right? Yeah.
But you know, to allude to what you were just talking about with the, you know, the vulnerability of leadership. You know, I can't remember where I was going with that. It's kind of left me. We can move on.
That's okay. This is just three guys having a conversation around a mic. It's all good.
Last week, or 2 weeks ago, Ryan, Michael, and I went to tour the new
Citizens Advocate.
And that facility, they're not quite open yet for the all of their services. They're doing some telehealth services,
right.
But that facility, from what it was to what it from what the building was to what it is now,
it's a grocery store.
It's incredible. It's amazing.
We know a few nurses that will be working there.
And you know, I'm real good friends with Julie, who is a provider there. She's a therapist. And she'll be on the podcast at some point, but she is, she's amazing. And all of her providers underneath her are, they're going to do a great job. And it's such a great place for the North, such a great option for the North Country to have.
Right. Yeah. I'm extremely happy that's going in. Beautiful location for it. The only gripe I have is the sign. The sign drives me nuts.
Sideways. You got to turn your head to look at it.
Yeah, I almost fell on the ground.
I think it's important to mention, too, that that's for anybody in a mental health crisis. You know, we focus on the first responder side of it and things like that, but all across, everywhere, across those countries, that mental health just in general it's hard to get people help, and, you know, they're working diligently to try to do it. It's just check on your people.
Yeah.
All mental health crises belong in a hospital, and that's exactly what they're there for. Well, one of their services anyways. Mm-hmm. So
it's an epidemic, like mental health, it doesn't discriminate. We've talked about that in the past. Mm-hmm. How old are you, Ryan?
32.
You're 32.
Okay. 33. When were we in May? Oh, we in June?
He's the oldest one here. 31 and Colin's 12. So
I've been involved in fire service since I was 14.
So you came in the time where,
wow, that's 20 years, right?
Where the old timers that were above you know, just suck it up, toughen up, kid.
Yeah.
It is. You knew what you were signing up for.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it's funny talking to those individuals now.
Their mindsets change.
Yeah. They're like, I wish what you guys are doing is amazing because I wish I would have talked about it because it ruined my marriage.
Yep.
It derailed my life for a little bit until I started to get the help I need. And then things started, you know, the pieces started to get picked back up.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in corrections, my father was, he retired out of corrections as a lieutenant, 25, 26, 27 years, somewhere. Wow. He did. And I always remember growing up, he never talked about what goes on in prison and what it was like. I never once heard him. It was always the good stories of working with these guys or these officers, and, you know, this guy did this and it was funny. It was never what you saw in there. So that was a connection that him and I were able to really get once I got in. You know, that was one good thing about that. And I kind of chuckled because when I was at the academy for that, I remember standing in the breakfast line one morning and a guy taps me on the shoulder and goes, "What are you doing here?" And it turned out it was my father was there for lieutenant school. He had to do a week of lieutenant school, never told me. So,
wow.
So that was pretty neat. But, you know, that was a big thing, was it just, you never, you know, at dinner, you never heard him talking about it. And to think, like, all the things that he's probably seen is incredible that he just never.
I can't even imagine.
A lot of folks of that generation that I know, and I'll say people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and older, they say, oh, that stuff wasn't around when I was a kid. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. now. And I don't think, and I can't speak for it because I wasn't there, but I don't think that it's not the fact that it wasn't around. It just wasn't openly talked about. And that's one of our things to say, is that we need to end the stigma around talking about mental health.
Yeah. And the question, I've talked to a few people about this, especially with how mental health is, even just in the US, a lot of people need help, right? And do you think as a society, we're more sensitive than we've ever been? Or are we just starting to listen to what, you know, the little voice in our head is saying, like, I'm not doing well, I'm not doing well. But
I think we're listening to the voices in our head, and people are starting to realize that I'm not well.
Right. You this know, is not normal.
Obviously, we can all beat it like to death, but COVID didn't help.
No.
That made it a lot worse for people. And, you know, yeah,
I think. You know, and this might be a reach, but I was taking a class the other day, and the guy said that we are such different people. Like, you're different than me, and Pat is different than me, and Pat and you are two different people, and you guys look and feel different. But he described it as if I had a room full of Canadian gooses, I mean, they'd all look the same. It would be easy. So why can't it all be the same for us, you know?
I wasn't gonna say it.
Geese. That's purely for the listeners. We're breaking the fourth wall. Yep. Geese. We got it. All right, people have to tell us.
At least it didn't say geeses or anything.
Yeah. At 10 minutes and 45 seconds into your podcast, Colin referred to them as gooses. He meant geese. Yes, we know.
Did I say gooses?
You said gooses.
You said goose.
Oh, I thought that I said one goose.
No. You said a bunch of Canadian gooses.
As in plural. Oh, shoot.
We're just a bunch of gooses in a geese world.
Gosh.
That's all right. I just wanted to call attention to it because I knew
somebody.
He would think that I have never taken an English class.
I always, you know, what's funny about that though is I always director Mr. Briggs, when he sends out his emails, I always somehow find a grammatical error in it. And I send it to him the other day. I said, just a grammar police here. You might want to fix this word. So I always get into that too.
It's all good fun.
It happens.
I like to point that out because, you know, the first episode, my dog just cried and cried and cried the entire episode. We had a panel of like well-respected people in our community. And I'm like, please, dog, stop crying. I'm like, and it, you know, for a large portion of it, I was like, yeah, the mic's not picking any of it up at all. And until we listened to
Pat, it did.
Starring Moose. Moose is not here today. We're at the office, so.
Yes, yeah. And thankfully, we haven't had any sirens drive by yet.
Yeah, and I have the headset on, so I can hear basically a fly fart. So, I don't hear any outside noise. It's windy, so nothing.
Impressive.
Just your voices in my head. Very nice.
I hope you don't dream about it.
Not yet. It'll probably start to happen around like episode 10. I'll start dreaming about all this. Or once we start recording more.
We might have to get the rest of us some headsets. So
I don't want to listen to myself talk.
So we can all dream about it.
Actually, when you're talking, I hear more of my echo in the room. I don't hear it. It's really weird. It's good. I don't even know what I'm saying because some other sound guy could probably explain it better, but you don't really hear yourself. But I hear you guys immaculately.
I did an interview. It's called Beyond the Lights Project. I found it on Instagram. A guy reached out to me. He's out of Colorado.
Yeah.
I did an interview on it.
Who watched it?
Yes.
Yeah. So I haven't watched it yet because I don't like to listen to my voice.
You've
so I probably won't even.
I think you did a marvelous job.
There were some things I talked about in there that some people, and you know, I hadn't even told my mother any of that, some of that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So unfortunately, she found out that way, but.
Wow. Wow. But you just randomly found him on Instagram?
Found him on Instagram, yeah. He's so he drives around the country, but obviously we live up here in Canada and it snows too much and he's from California, so he's not a good driver in the snow.
Oh god.
So we just did it. You know, I just filmed it myself, sent it to him and he edited it. That's pretty cool. Yeah, he's on Instagram.
You would have never known that you filmed it yourself.
No. Yeah, I just set an iPad up. He's like, set an iPad up in the back of the fire engine, and I was like, well, I'll turn the red light on. He goes, perfect.
You know, for someone who claims that they're not very tech savvy,
Oh, I have to learn. I'm learning more. Red Cross, and there's some things I didn't even know. It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He, man, from California. What's his name?
It's called Beyond the Lights Project.
Beyond the Lights, right. Yeah. Beyond the Lights
Project. So he's doing, you know, he's kind of along the same thing, just getting people's stories. You know, he did a flight medic one. He's done a couple cops. He actually did a husband and wife. The husband obviously was in, I think he was in law enforcement. You know, he did his, and then he talked to his spouse about how it affected home life. You know, she had nothing to do with law enforcement. That's a very good point of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after you're done listening to this podcast, make sure you guys go and look this up and, you know, like and subscribe to him, like and subscribe to us.
Yeah, maybe we can reach out to him, see if we can get him on.
Yeah, whether it's 100% Zoom or, he would, you know, so he's still, every couple of weeks he reaches out. So
he drives all around the country doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And, what does he do for a living?
Van, that's it.
That's it.
Got a YouTube channel, all that good stuff.
Good for him. Is he a first responder?
He was.
What did he do?
I don't know, 100%, really. I don't know which field he was in, but he was a first responder.
Gotcha. Wow, that's awesome. We need more people like that. I haven't watched any of the other episodes besides yours. Me and Julia watched that episode with you in it. She was like, look what I found. I'm like,
yeah, I hid that pretty well. I didn't share it. People still found it.
Still mysterious, but so forthcoming at the same time.
Yeah, you know, poor Julia. I stole her phone to watch it one day, and she didn't know what to do with herself.
Oh, God, I know. She didn't know what to do. You didn't make it through the whole episode either.
No, I didn't. That's right. I think I made it through like 8 of the 20 minutes.
That's funny. That's funny. Oh, well, man.
Well, Ryan, I just want to thank you for agreeing to be on this episode today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're very happy to have you at the Priority Wellness Campaign.
Yeah, I agree. You're a good asset, and I'm glad you moved into the Red Cross.
Yeah.
Seems, like I said, aligns more with your goals.
You don't underestimate how sleeping in your own bed at night is. Don't do it for, I think I was midnights for 6 years.
I get it.
You know, I could have went to days, but at home, in the home life, that's what worked for us. So,
yeah.
You know, like I said, with this new one, it's a little bit adaptive, but we got a big family to help us. And
yeah.
I'm excited where it's going to take me.
I did the overnights for a long time, most of my career. So I get it.
That messes with your mental health just as much as some of the stuff you see. It's just running on energy drinks and sleep deprived.
Yeah.
You're irritable. Nicotine. Someone looks at you wrong and you rip their head off.
Nicotine, caffeine.
Yeah.
So I typically do overnights when I do work, but it's just one per week.
in your white cloud.
Yes. So. I sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, anytime I do a shift with you on the ambulance, you're like, I haven't run a call in like 3 weeks. Maybe today will be a day.
And I kind of chuckle about Colin's comment about sleeping at night. And people are like, yeah, that's all people do is sleep at night. Well, that's true when there's no calls. But when you're woken up by that and you're instantly going from 0 to 100,
mm-hmm.
it's wild.
Yeah. Yep. At the agency that Pat and I are at, the poor crew last night got like 6 calls.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. And those are people that like to sleep at night too. Yeah. So.
But it's definitely busier up here than it used to be.
You know? Yeah. I feel like after COVID, nobody's safe now. Like, good luck getting sleep.
Yeah. I used to work night shifts full time, and that's pretty much what put a halt to that for me.
Yep.
The sleep aspect to it.
Well, COVID and just getting so busy during that time.
Yeah. And talk about compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
Let alone that, you know, this virus that we don't know a whole lot about, whether you believe, you know, it was all whatever, fake or just some government conspiracy, or it was a legitimate thing.
Still was a scary time.
It was. It was because we didn't know a whole lot about it. You didn't know who to believe. So, and I had COVID. I knew people that had COVID. Mm-hmm. Pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it wasn't anything to be, what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't anything to joke about. But we were inundated with a lot of calls.
And, yeah.
You know, like, and you utilize universal precautions.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And things were changing daily.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, folks, if you have any sort of topics that you would like to hear from us, please reach out to podcast@pwcnny.org. Again, that's PWC. No, that's not right. podcast@pwcnny.org. There we go.
There you go. And gooses. That is all.
And as always, here at the Priority Wellness Podcast, we are here for the mental health of first responders and everybody.
Cool. That's a wrap.
Word.
Thanks, everybody.